Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.
On the latest episode of BCC The Other Side, we take a look at the flaming hot close encounter of the Felix Fire Demon. Bryce brings in some UFO videos for us to analyze, and we share a BCC news item from a listener. Do the Northern Lights make sounds? To subscribe to The Other Side, go to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club.
It's Bigfoot Collectors Club with Bryce and Michael. I know a ghost story or two. Let's do this.
Well, hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Bigfoot Collectors Club. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our super producer,
Riley Bray.
Woo! Hi! Hey! Welcome back to the clubhouse.
Pleasantries.
We're doing
all
it.
Around.
We're still in it, everybody. We're gonna make it happen.
Doing
no
this
matter
thing. Yeah.
What. I was going through our Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram today and just like, really, I mean, who wants to talk about this, but really just like, oh my God, it was that long ago since we did an episode with a guest in the studio. You know, I did I had one of those moments.
Yeesh, yeah.
But then I looked
the
at all the
times.
Yeah, I looked at all the wonderful guests we managed to have over this past year, and it made me feel immediately better. Yeah.
Well, and I like how we theme out our pictures for the episodes too. It's kind they're kind of fun now, you know. We
and
do
we
fun stuff
do?
Like put bags on our heads and
yeah.
You know, stuff like
well,
that. So
what
that's
are we gonna
fun.
Do? Go back to like boring group photos.
Yeah, no,
you know what I mean.
Those days are over.
Necessity is the mother of invention, right, boys?
That's true.
Right.
It's true.
And also, I feel like even if this thing ever does end, you guys are just never coming over again. This is truly so much easier.
Yeah, it's, I'm saving up on that gas money, bro.
That's the other thing. Yeah. We will never be able to get another guest into a physical studio space ever again after this year.
That's not happening.
It's not going to happen. However, I have two requests, guys. We do a Shaver Lake campfire episode.
Check.
Ooh,
done.
Yeah, done.
And we have to do, I don't want to say it has to be this summer, but I kind of feel like it might have to be. We're all on our way to getting vaxxed. We have to do the BCC jet ski special at some point. I just think we put it out there last year, then a pandemic hit. So we have to do it. All right. Speaking of great guests, we have one coming up. Oh, she's a real treat. But before we do that, I have to remind you guys, you listeners out there, there are evil algorithms trying to take over our minds.
It's
but
true.
Then there are good algorithms that are trying to get the podcasts that you love, like this one, to more cool people so that we can help fight the evil reality from taking over. Right? So do us a favor. Bryce, what should they do?
Well, they should leave a 5-star review because that alone helps this podcast get to so many more new listeners, and it just raises our profile a tiny little bit.
Yes, head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get to do a 5-star review. But here on Apple Podcasts, I like to read the 5-star reviews if you leave us one. Here's one that's, it doesn't even have to be long. It's short and sweet. Good times with the Bigfoot boys. 5 stars by AJ Says. and he says, love me some BCC. That's it. That's all you got to do.
Right.
AJ,
right.
He, she, non-binary, I'm sorry. I projected my own gender on you, and I apologize. let's bring in tonight's guest. Ladies and gentlemen, and non-binary friends out there, she is... first of all, do you have a pronoun preference, I should ask?
She.
Great. So yeah. She, her...
The Almighty.
She is...
Just the Almighty.
The Almighty She.
I like that one.
Is, let me tell you, she's an actor, comedic performer, successful voiceover artist. My God, you might have seen her in Adam Ruins Everything. You may have seen her in Drunk History. You might have heard her as the voice of Supergirl. DC Superhero Girls. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. Club Scouts of the world, please give a warm welcome salute to Anaïs Fairweather.
Woo! Oh my God. Wow. Woo! I am saluting you from afar, Bigfoot boys.
Yes.
I think that should be, I love this coined phrase, Bigfoot boys.
I like that. Bigfoot boys. Nice.
Is it's it so be, good.
Should it be B-O-I-S or B-O-Y-S?
It's boys.
Boys.
I think that's the way we've been doing it. And I don't know if that's like a dated... Is that like a dated thing? Is that out of fashion?
No, it's good.
We're old enough to be dated.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, exactly. We're all dated. And it's a feeling. It evokes a feeling.
That's,
boys.
That's what it is. It's a feeling.
It's good. A feeling. Wow, I'm so happy.
And the three of us
here.
Have all dated as well. Bryce, Michael, and Riley have all dated.
Did you slip something in my drink? I don't remember.
There's been a secret romance that no one's known about that's been happening over the past 3.5 seasons of the
show. You know what? I have to say, I have seen some photos of you guys online, if you were to Google yourselves. And there's some photos of you guys wearing some nice matching, I think almost matching jean jackets from probably some conventions. So
I
could see something happening, something going down.
That was a pretty good date, you know, romantic UFO
that
convention.
Let's be honest.
I bet the three of you had the best date ever.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Wouldn't it be nice if like that conversation could just exist with so many other people in the world? Whatever happened between the three of you?
We did order pizza in a hotel room, and we played a early version of Bryce's dirty game, Dirty Picture Cover Up, and that was maybe one of the most fun nights I've ever had.
Mm. Oh, we got to do that again.
That was a good time. Anaïs, we got to get into your personal paranormal history because I have a feeling you have something to share. But before we do that, Riley, get ready because Bryce has brought in some
BCC news.
Well done.
Guys, monkeys are playing Pong with their mind. Have you seen this video? Elon Musk's Neuralink shows a monkey playing Pong with his mind.
Now, is it a monkey or is it a chimpanzee? Because a chimpanzee
is an ape. No, it's a monkey. It's a monkey.
Okay. All right, got it.
We're going to jump into this right now. I decided to go with BBC News. And this is reported by Jane Wakefield, technology reporter. Neuralink.
Where's the website?
On the BBC.
Oh! I thought you said BCC.
Yeah, little play on letters there. I thought you might enjoy that.
Well done.
Neuralink, Elon Musk's computer to brain interface firm, has released a video it claims shows a monkey playing the video game Pong with its mind. Its brain signals were sent wirelessly via an implanted device. The hope is that the interface could eventually allow people with neurological conditions to control phones or computers remotely. One expert said the fact that no wires were used represented, quote, significant progress, but more data was needed. The macaw, monkey.
Bryce,
it's
are
good
you playing
all three of those.
Are you playing ping pong with your mind right now?
macaw.
That little monkey's name was Pager. Who's for Pager? I used to have the best, coolest pager. It was highlight yellow, and oh man, I love when that thing went off. Anyway, it was first taught to play the video game with a joystick and was rewarded with a fruit smoothie. During this process, the Neuralink device recorded the information about which neurons were firing to control which movements. Then, the joystick was disconnected, leaving the monkey to control the gameplay with only its mind. Researchers are quoted, "Our mission is to build a safe, effective clinical BMI, brain-machine interface system that is wireless and fully implantable, to give people with paralysis their digital freedom back, to communicate more easily via text, to follow their curiosity on the web, porn, to express their creativity through photography, art, and yes, play video games." And I'm done there. That's enough for me. You get the idea. But how cool is that? I mean, future is here, guys.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah, it's very cool.
That is amazing. Yeah. I love what we can do with this technology. Like, that is so powerful, what we can do with this technology. It does feel a little scary, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
It does in a way.
It feels scary. Sad. It feels sad for the monkey, which is pronounced, I just listened to it, macaque.
Macaque. Thank you.
Macaque. It's a macaque. Okay, I feel bad for macaque.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah. That's much better.
Too much playing on the joystick. Oh, boy. Macaque.
The goal is what? We're just going to control computers with our minds. That's where we're headed with this,
yeah, pretty much. Look, I've heard Elon Musk talk about this on Joe Rogan's podcast. It's basically he's saying, look, we've already have a symbiotic relationship with our technological devices. They just happen to be in our pockets. At some point in the near future, that's going to go away. And, you know, it probably won't be too long before we're all asking to get these neural links if it's a relatively, out the door operation. You know, you don't have to like just quick get it done. And well, maybe that's not the case, but I could see a lot of people getting this stuff, you know.
But
Bryce, when your kids are on your case to get the brain chip like they are about a cell phone, what are you going to say?
Yeah, come on, Dad. I want the brain chip. All my friends have it.
I'll get you your brain chip, but is this how we leave a bathroom? No, it's not. So until we can learn how to properly clean up after ourselves, then we're not going to get the Neuralink, okay?
But people don't want to get the vaccine because they're afraid there are nanobots in it. Do you really think people are going to, which they're not, do you really think that people are going to voluntarily want to put chips in their brains? Think of the conspiracy theories that are going to come along with this.
Oh, God, yeah.
I could totally
maybe
see.
Maybe it'll be like people putting them in their dogs, you know?
Right.
Well, our dogs already have microchips in them.
Right, but yeah, imagine if you could play video games with your dog.
Oh,
like,
man.
How awesome is that?
Or maybe like it could communicate its vocalizations into English language, you know what I mean? And so you could actually talk to your dog.
Have you guys seen that dog? There's a dog on Instagram, and I can't remember the name of the dog. I will look this up and I will put it as a reference in our Instagram. There's a dog that has a soundboard with all these different words on it. And its owner trained her to talk to them by stepping on these buttons. Like, hungry, hungry now, water, walk, daddy, play. Like, and it literally will sad. It'll be like sad. And it'll like
that
tap
awful.
A button.
Oh,
and they trained it, and then they know exactly what the dog is thinking. It's like it looks like a pedal board with all these buttons on it that's about as long as like a dining room table. And this dog like talks
Jesus,
to them.
They really give him a lot of options.
Yes, it is. It has like 26 or 27 words on there at least.
Oh my. See, I think that that is extremely dangerous. I feel like dogs are already, I mean, I love dogs. I love animals. Don't get me wrong, okay? But they are guilt machines, right?
Hey.
It's like you're constantly.
Hey, mommy. Hate, mommy, love, dog.
Hate.
Hate, mommy. I mean, imagine all of the things that they're, it's like kind of nice that you don't know what your dog is saying sometimes because then you could just be like, listen, I'll get to it, you know?
Totally.
But if you had to know, it's like, I know you're hungry. I can't get to it right now.
You're always fucking hungry.
Yeah. And they always want to go on a walk. They always want a bone. They're all ego, you know, which makes them, I mean, that would be dangerous.
Abuse.
Yeah, Violets would just
abuse.
Be squirrel.
I'm not abusing you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Abuse.
Human.
Yeah, your friend,
abuse.
You're trying to have a dinner party. Neglected.
Look over here. Look. Yeah, Violets would just be like squirrel, food, pet, and bedtime. That's all it would be.
Right. Yeah. You would give the options. You'd limit the options. You wouldn't have a dining room table full of options for your dog, hopefully.
I feel like you get that, and then you just realize dogs have nothing to talk about. They are boring. And then we stop getting dogs. You know what I mean? Like, it's more interesting right. when you think that they would actually have a full conversation with you, which I have in my brain with my dog.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, we want to be able to project on our dogs. We don't want to know what they're actually thinking or feeling. We want to guess.
Chip in your head. Are you going to do this?
Absolutely not. No, I definitely don't want a chip in my head. I think it's really wonderful, though, for people who have, you know, are differently abled, and then they can, you know, that's really awesome, because I think it would be so hard to be limited physically, you know?
Yep.
And if you, because our minds are so limitless, you know, and to be able to operate more physically, you know, with this chip would be awesome.
I 100% agree. I think that is a great excuse to develop this type of technology. And I would love to see it applicated that way. I mean, that's
me too.
That's the goal, man.
The cyborgs. Also, it would be cool if you could write a screenplay just by thinking about it.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
God. Oh, right.
Because this also, like, I love dreams, and I know that you guys have talked about dreams in the past, which is part of the reason why I love this podcast too. But it's like, I've always wanted kind of like a Minority Report situation where you could create your dreams, like your dreams could be projected and you could rewatch your dreams.
Oh,
I would get the chip in my brain for that, especially if Elon Musk came up with it, because I feel like he's anti-government enough where you'd be like, he's not involved in a conspiracy theory, right?
Right. Oh my God.
That's
a wild thought, Anaïs. Can you imagine if you could
love this?
That would be so great if you could actually like play back your dreams, because we all remember them so categorically. But I mean, to be able to just like watch them like a Friday night movie, that'd be amazing.
How fun would that be? Everyone could bring their dream
you're like,
to the
this
party.
Plot sucks.
Right.
Well, you had sex with a lot of people in your dream, dude.
Right. So how many times do we have to see you like making out with Britney Spears in this dream?
I've seen this movie. Jesus.
Okay. Okay. Nev Campbell showing up again. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I don't like it. Maybe. Never mind. Never mind that.
All the stars from 2002.
Stars from 2002. Your dream was super 2002, man. It's 2021. Get with it.
Guilty.
Live in the now.
I know.
Oh, boy.
All right. People said, oh, boy, at the same time.
Oh, boy. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into Anaïs's personal paranormal history.
Please.
Anaïs, we like to ask all of our guests, what is your personal paranormal history?
Oh, boy. Honestly, I do feel like this is almost like a history book. Like, ooh. You got to open up. You got to take this dusty book off the shelf, take it down, blow it off, and, you know, open it up. It feels rich. Ooh. I don't know if it's really that rich, but for me, it feels like a thick book.
Okay.
So just to give you, like, the quick end of it, I think I have a very rich experience with it. Part of it is a result of the fact that, you know, not to get sad at all, but, you know, my dad passed when I was 13, but my dad was born in 1919.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
My father was 64 years old when I was born.
Whoa.
So yes.
Sorry, that was rude.
Is that Keith Romero from junior high? Dude, I came to your house today and your grandpa answered the door. And I'm like, no, that's my dad. And he's like, no, this guy was old. And I'm like, no, that's my dad. And he's like, no, this guy was like really old. I'm like, yeah, that's my dad. He's like, ew.
But that's just, I mean, that's like, who is it? Yeah. Tony Randall had his kid at like 75. That's, look.
It's a wild thing to do.
Yeah. Selfishly, I'm like, okay, I still have time. So that's really what I'm thinking about. But
you're good, dude. You got some years. You're fine.
You got a few years.
How were your dad's knees? Did he complain about his knees a lot? Because I feel like that's what would happen to me.
I mean, honestly, Not great. But my dad also was a fighter pilot in World War II. So planes in World War II before they had like proper apparatus to help with your asthma. So yeah, his body was like failing him pretty steadily throughout my life. But he was this really powerful man, and he had a powerful spirit. He had near-death experiences throughout his life as a fighter pilot. So, and he was a minister. He was also a psychoanalyst. He had 13 licenses in the state of California. He was this brilliant mind. I know. I don't know how I wasn't breastfed long enough or something, because honestly, I came just tumbling out. Anyway, and so because of who my dad was, both my parents were psychoanalysts. So I learned to have lucid dreams as a child. Like dinner table talk was always like, what were you dreaming last night? That kind of stuff. So it always sort of intrigued me that like, there's so many things we don't know about the world. And there's so many things that we don't know about our own mind that we're constantly learning, and we can't really put limitations on anything. And I feel that way about the world at large. And then when my dad passed, it kind of opened up this door to that other realm. And my dad, you know, was very spiritual. And, you know, as he was dying, he saw angels and like things happened. And so throughout my life, like I've had a lot of experiences with the other side. And, you know, like I said to you guys, like I feel like this is like a party I've always wanted to be invited to, getting to be on this podcast, because I have had a lot of experiences that you can't talk about with everybody, because a lot of people laugh it off or think it's crazy, or they just don't absorb it in the right way. But I feel like this is like the place I can talk about it, you know?
100%. Yes.
Yeah. So, so that's kind of, and then growing up, my brother and I like loved horror movies. We were like big into horror movies. I don't really like horror movies today. They got a little too scary and a little too psychotic, if you will.
Yep.
Like I like movies, like horror movies in the 80s and the 90s, where everything was left to the imagination and like a good score, like this, everything was in the score and in the music, and it left you thinking, and our own imagination is far more wild than anything you can put on screen.
I'm literally training my children that I have this movie list and it's like, son, are you ready for Terminator 1 this week? And like, not yet, dad. Terminator 2 was good a few weeks ago, but I mean, I'm getting over the blood, so I think I'll be ready for Terminator 1 in a few weeks. I'm like, good. You did Aliens last night. You did it really well. So let's just keep moving down this list.
Oh my God, you sound just like my mom. Like my mom, I think I was in sixth grade and she's like, I had a sleepover with my friend Taylor, and my mom was like, hey girls, I picked up a movie at the movie store. Do you guys want to watch Carrie tonight? And we were like, okay.
That's so good.
It was just like, oh my God. That like, movie was insane, but I loved it.
And like the whole opening of Carrie is just like a bunch of 70s Bush.
Oh, so much Bush.
Like, whoa.
So much Bush. And I have to say, like, being, you know, I was born in 1984. Sorry, everybody out there who's like in their 20s, but, you know, I'm an old lady. And I have to say this, like, moms all had Bushes, you know, like full on.
Sure.
So, like, that's what I was used to. Like, when I saw that opening scene of Carrie, I was just like, yeah, that's a bunch of Bushes. Like, that's what women have. Like,
checks out.
Yeah. First thing on the list about life. Okay, great. Everyone's got a bush. Oh, not anymore. God.
Were your parents
people are doing to their vaginas?
Did they remain together? Were your parents always together?
They were always together. Wow. And like my mom never remarried. I mean, my dad
How could
passed
she? What
away
a fascinating
over 20-
man.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, he was extremely fascinating and such an open mind and open spirit. I mean, he really was like somebody who, I tell this to my friends who, you know, who lose loved ones, or at this point, you know, people are losing their parents, unfortunately. And I just tell them, you know, the relationship will be what you want it to be. Like if you want the relationship to continue, it will. It's a new relationship, but it's not over, you know? And so I just had to like learn my dad in this realm, you know, where we don't see each other, but like he's extremely present. still, love that. You know.
So how, and how specifically, like, let's get into it. I want to hear.
Yeah, let's get into it. Okay, so.
Let's have the conversation you're afraid to have anywhere else.
Oh my God. And I've had these conversations with people and they're like, oh yeah, well, that's pretty scary. And I'm like, no, it's not scary at all. It's cool, you know? But so when my dad passed away, it's kind of an unusual situation, but he actually like was still in the home. We had a hospital bed and we had like nurses who would come in and take care of him when my mom was working. And so we actually were fortunate enough to have a hospital bed in the house. So he was always at home. So he died in the house. And the night that he passed away, he was on a breathing tube and my mom came downstairs because she had to have the hospital bed downstairs. And he was like kind of, she could tell that like, you know, he hadn't eaten in a week. And so his body was like, you know, his body had already crossed, like, or his spirit was trying to cross over, but couldn't because he was forced to breathe from this breathing machine. So my mom said, do you want me to remove it? And he shook his head, yes. And so she did. And she said, can you hear, this is like kind of, sorry, but she said, can you hear the bells ringing? Can you hear the angels singing? Because my dad was very spiritual. And he nodded his head, yes. And so she like, you know, stayed with him for a little bit and then came back upstairs to come get me. And at that time, I heard a tapping at the window. Before she came upstairs, I heard a tapping at the window. And I woke up from a sleep from this tapping at the window. And the light outside my window like was really bright. And we had a baby monitor on him. And so from the room, because I was sleeping in my mom's room, the baby monitor, I heard bells ringing on the baby monitor. And my mom got upstairs.
Oh, my God.
And she said, I think your dad's going to be passing away soon. And I was like, I think he just did, because I heard a tapping at the window and I heard bells ringing on the baby monitor. And we went and got my brother and we went downstairs and he had passed away. Wow. And then the next day they have to embalm the body and all of those things. And so I was going to go with my friend Jessica and her mom, and they were going to take me shopping, as you do in Orange County when someone has died. Another mom in the neighborhood takes you shopping, and that's what you do. Because what do you want to do after you've just lost your father? You want to go to the mall, right? That's what everybody.
New top. Yep.
I mean, talk about a zombie. I literally was just walking around that mall like such a zombie that day. But I was blow drying my hair in the bathroom, and we had like a Jack and Jill bathroom, which I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it's like, okay. I was like, I don't know if that's like a normal term for it, but anyways, a Jack and Jill
tell
bathroom.
Our listeners, maybe some of our listeners don't.
Yeah. It's basically a bathroom in between two bedroom doors. And so two bedrooms share one bathroom. And so I was blow drying my hair and the doors were shut, and all of a sudden the door opened. Like it opened, one of the doors like just completely opened. It wasn't completely shut, but it opened up all the way, and this big gust of wind came through the bathroom, and it's like I could smell my dad. And I was like, okay, it must just be, I'll shut the window in my brother's room. So I walked into my brother's room to shut the window, and the window was shut. So it was just like this like insane gust of wind that came in. And then for like years after this, every time I would walk into the room, the light would turn on and I'd be like, dad, and the light would turn off. This happened for years, and it got to the point where like my friends were like, I don't want to spend the night at your house because your dad scares me. So I had asked him to stop. And then one last like crazy thing that happened growing up was like my friend Jessica and I were playing, and we hear this ringing, and it's like a telephone ringing, and we can't find it. We finally realize it's in our messy closet. Like we had this like a messy drawer, but we had like a messy closet growing up. And we opened it up. We could hear the ringing from inside there. And so we found that there was this like phone. It was a cord, like a phone with a cord, but it wasn't plugged in.
Wow.
And it was just ringing. And so I like picked it up.
Yeah, you did.
I mean, why the hell not?
Anna East here. How may I help you?
Yes, spirits. Yeah. Calling from the other side. What would you like to say? And there was obviously nothing. No one said anything on the other line. But it was those kinds of experiences happened all the time growing up. And
undeniable.
And, you know, it really was one of those things where my mom was like, listen, you know, you either can lean into it or you can lean out of that. And, you know, if you lean in, it could take over, you know? And so it really just depends on what you want. And so I leaned out, you know, but I've always felt like I've had one foot in that world, you know, because I grew up with it. It shaped so much of the way that I see the world is through the experience I had with my dad and his passing. And I think when you have death happen in the family at such an early age, you, because he was sick for such a long time too, it shapes the way that you see the world, you know, it kind of allows the thin veil of life to like be lifted.
Yeah.
And you can see through it, you know?
Wow. Do you still?
I'm sorry. I said, you know, and I know a lot of people hate that when they're like, you know, and then it's like, yeah, I guess.
Anna-East, I don't
we do
know.
Anna, we do.
Come on, Bigfoot boys.
So that word verbiage works here.
I'd like to talk to you after this podcast. Do you
Wait, really?
No, I'm just, well, of course we're friends. Do you still feel like you get communication with, from your dad now? Cause you said you kind of left it behind, but where's all that now? You know?
Totally. I definitely do. I mean, he comes to me in dreams a lot. Not like cause I remember I think one of you had said this in the past on the podcast is like you, if you ask for it and then you go to sleep, sometimes like it'll, like they'll come to you. Mm. And that like, it doesn't always happen that way, but he has come to me and said some very important things to me. And I've like always written those things down, and then it will be like years later and those things will mean so much. And it's like, oh, well, that was actually a really profound thing that he said in my dream. But my relationship with him is still the same. Like I don't have like lights turning on and off anymore. And it's not like doors are being opened and wind is blowing in my face and those kinds of things, but he's really present. Like, I'll get readings done. I really love, there's this, one of my friends, Charlene de Guzman, she's charlenejoy.com, and you can get like readings with her, and she's really fantastic. And I've done some readings with her, and my dad has definitely come through. And I write down everything that she tells me that he says and stuff. And it's really cool. Like I had a reading in the last month and he said so many poignant things to me about the way that I need to be living my life. Like little things like accept your body, accept yourself, like have extreme love for yourself. And of course, like these things kind of could be for anybody, you know, but they resonate so deeply at certain times in my life where I'm like, oh my God, I'm really struggling with this. And then just doing something to work on that one little thing completely opens up my life in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of my favorite books is Surviving Death by Leslie Keen. And she's an investigative journalist. So she takes a very pragmatic, real approach. And she wanted to know for herself, like, what was to this sort of, you know, these afterlife correspondences, and basically what she came away with is, you know, when these loved ones reach out, it's in such a personal way, a profound way that, if, you know, for anyone else, they'd be like, oh, that's just that, you know, but like when it's targeted to you, you know, from someone you love, it's so specific, you know?
Yes.
And it's just, it sounds like that's the same thing. And it's just, it's meant for you, not for everybody else to believe in it, but it's like, they're just little signs and gifts for you. Well, I think that's so profound, you know?
And it's also advice that your dad would give you if he were alive too. It's very practical, you know, as spiritual as it hits you, that the thing that I was thinking of is like the messages that you're getting. That's like fatherly love. That's like dad's telling you like, hey, don't sweat this stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
These are the important things in life, you know, which I feel like that's what parents should do, you know, just kind of like light the way for their kids and their adult children, you know?
100%.
We've heard about like in quantum physics, a lot of this talk about like entangled particles, right? And I feel like if particles can be entangled
all the time, I mean, everywhere we go.
Oh my God. I love talking about entanglement.
I was just talking about them the other day.
No, I was. I've been talking about entanglement for like 6 weeks.
Oh, perfect. Great. Well, I always feel, or I feel today right now that if particles can be entangled, then so can people, right? And it's like, so, for instance,
yes,
as soon as
we are made up of particles, we're
and
made
it
up
transcends
of energy.
Space and time, it's faster than the speed of light. The communication is instantaneous, and it's like if you're thinking about your father and that has resonance, then boom, your father is immediately connected and on that pathway, and he can, you know, he can communicate like no problem, like nobody's business. And it's like, I just feel like the people in our lives that we are entangled with them, and it crosses death, it crosses time, it crosses space, you know, and if we tune into those, to those bonds, for lack of a better word, then they're there. They're there to be used.
You and your dad have formed a dyad in the Force.
Amen.
Oh, my God.
You're just like Rey and Kylo.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Same. I'm like, you lost.
No, I 100%. I mean, like, there's so much to entanglement, too. I mean, like, you said it all perfectly. Exactly. That one affects the other, you know, 100%. And it has to, and it doesn't. And we're so limited, you know. We understand so little about just our physical world, you know. Yeah. And things are constantly being broken. The way that we know geometry and physics are constantly, laws are constantly changing and being broken. And so it's like, what is anything? You know, I mean, we're powerful beings. Everything is matter. Everything is shifting and energy. And so it's just like we're only limited to our own mind and the way that we see the world. So if you see the world limit, if there's limitlessness in the world, then the world is going to be without limit.
Here.
Now, do you think this connection you have with your father, do you think this is something that comes naturally to everybody, or do you think like your dad was predispositioned to be sort of, you know, stronger on the other side, or you're more receptive? Like, is there a history of this stuff in your family, or what?
I think those are all such great questions. Yes, I do. I actually had this conversation recently with a really good family friend of ours. One of my dad's really good friends who, of course, was much younger than him. And he's unfortunately, he's been diagnosed with brain cancer. And so he's been in many rounds of chemotherapy and surgeries, but it's going to take him, you know? And I told him, you know, you guys had talked about this on the podcast, is that like whatever you're dealing with on the planet, whatever you're searching for, whatever lessons you're trying to learn on Earth, you're going to continue learning on the other side, or whatever we turn into after we leave our physical bodies. And we're going to be constantly working on that thing. And so I think my dad on Earth was just such an evolved person and such an evolved spirit. And of course he had things that he struggled with like anybody else, you know, but he was so evolved. And like you said, Michael, you know, you could definitely still have kids. And I have to say that, like, I really appreciate that my dad was older, because he imparted so much wisdom and he understood that every moment was important. And we get caught up, like I get caught up in my own stuff all the time. And I'm like, oh my God, I have a daughter. Like, I have to pay attention to my 1.5-year-old, you know, like, what are you doing? You know? But my dad rarely did that. Like, every moment was special and important to him. And so I think being such an evolved spirit has definitely allowed him to stay extremely connected to me and to my family, you know, on the other side. So I do think that that is part of it. And then, you know, I'm Sicilian. And so being Sicilian and Italian, like, you know, lore exists in families, you know.
Family is everything, yeah.
Everything. And, you know, there was never a time that you went to like a family dinner and you didn't sit on the couch and you realized that you were sitting on Nana because she was underneath that Afghan blanket. Like, there was old people in the house all the time. So there was always this connection to life and death. It was always in our face. No one was in an old folks home. You know, everyone died in the home. And so being connected to that, I think also allows us to be open in a different way.
So you were exposed, sounds like, not just with your father, but your family was, you know, death wasn't something that was hidden away.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, most of us in modern society, that's kind of the case. You know what I mean? Like, we remove death from the house. You know, it happens in a hospital or in hospice.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, for you know, I feel like, you know, thousands of years, that was something that people were more witness to. And now we have sort of that disconnection with it, I feel like.
We do. And we don't have connection to the process of people passing either. Like, I've listened to podcasts or documentaries or people speak about death. And, you know, a lot of people heal through the process of, you know, burying their family. And, you know, in more like tribal communities, like being able to bury the body of your loved one, like it helps you grieve and heal and process death. And
yeah,
a lot of times it's like, until you really have a relationship with death, like how do you really live?
100%. Yep.
Things that's been so hard about this year in particular with people losing loved ones, you know.
Oh God, yeah. People have experienced, and then and then, you know, not being able to be with their loved one, you know, because they can't get into the hospital, is traumatizing, you know. But to those people, like, I would definitely encourage, like, either getting a reading or, like, even just, like, going into a dark room and lighting a candle and, like, just talking out loud to that person and allowing that, you know, that relationship to exist. And I think that even those people who maybe weren't, like, my dad, who were, like, extremely evolved, whatever, I think that it still opens a door, definitely, for them to realize that they're still around.
Was there a moment you had to get over where you're like, I'm going to talk out loud to a spirit right now, and I feel stupid? You know what I mean?
100%. Usually, this is how it goes. I'll, like, sit down, I'll be like, listen, hey, Dad, like, I'm really struggling. I know everybody else in the world is struggling way more than me, and this is stupid that I'm even asking for your help right now, but, like, I just, like, can you help me? I know it's dumb. Like, every time I, like, sit down, I'm like, oh my God, this is so lame. But I can't help it.
I remember, like, having so I like, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I like to think I'm a pretty, you know, spiritual person. But I say a little prayer at bed every, you know, it's more just a term of a grateful endearment for the day or whatever before I go to sleep. And I remember I used to say it out loud and be like, wait a minute. I was like, if there's God, he's got to be able to read my mind. I don't have to say this shit out loud and embarrass myself. I'll just do it right in my own mind, man. It's like, there you go.
I'll do it in my mind, and then I'll do it on a podcast, baby.
Right, right. So I do a lot of mind prayers.
I was walking around my apartment, tuning mind prayers. I was walking around the apartment the other night because two nights ago, I was having, like, really wild, weird, scary dreams. And then, like, it wasn't quite sleep paralysis. I think I was asleep, but I was dreaming that I was in my bed and there were, like, entities in the room. And I was, like, having this, like, cosmic, like, astral battle in my brain to get these fuckers out of my personal space, you know?
Wow.
And I was actually chatting with Marcy Jaro about it, and she's like, you got to cleanse your space. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So I got my sage and my dragon's blood and the incense that Adela Levine told me to get, shout out. And I was, like, walking around the room, walking around my apartment, like, saging, and then being like, it's that thing where, like, I still have a hard time committing 100% out loud. So I'm like, okay, evil spirit, get out. I don't want you in here.
You know who you are.
Don't do this anymore. Like, only Albie, my dog, you're welcome. But just, like, there's part of you that, like, feels like you should be, like, commanding it, you know what I mean? And, right, like, you're just like, oh,
with your magician's dagger.
Doing, like, hot dukes.
Right. Yeah, like, exactly.
Show you again.
Like, you motherfucker. You know, but, like, I'm just like, it's, like, sort of half committed coming out of me. It's, like, stuck in my chest a little bit. But I'll tell you what, I slept like a baby that night. I really did.
Oh, my God.
That is such a funny image. And I love the idea of, like, the ghosts or the entities on the other side being like, okay, here, hey, guys, he's going to try and do the saging. Let's watch.
I like
okay.
I like the idea. I like the idea of a half committed like Gandalf. You know what I mean? You shouldn't pass here. Don't pass. This is
maybe go around.
Maybe go around if you can. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know, guys. Stupid. I feel stupid.
No, Gandalf, keep going. Yeah, no, is it okay?
Stupid.
It's okay.
This is dumb.
All right.
Is this working? I don't know. I think my neighbors can hear me.
It's so funny. Anytime that we've like saged the house or anything, my husband's always like, all right, dudes, like, listen, we're super chill. We're just like super chill. We're just hanging out here. Okay. Like, you can stay, but be chill. Everyone be chill. He like turns into this like complete surfer dude, which That's he is, awesome. But like, he just wants everybody to be chill.
That's great. Yeah. He's going more for like gracious party host than like exorcist.
Yes, exactly.
It's all good. Like, you know, you can crash here if you need to. Right. We're winding down, right. But you know. Yeah. Whatever, you know, it's cool.
Take it outside if it's gonna get heated. Just take it out. Go for a walk, maybe. So, Ennis, what do you think? What do you think the other side looks like? Like, what is it in your brain when you think?
Okay, this is gonna sound so lame. Well, here's the thing: I have no idea, but I have to say, did you guys ever watch the OA?
I didn't. I heard it was great.
I did. Yeah.
Oh God, I didn't loved know. It.
What is the OA?
The Original Angel.
Oh.
And it was a series on
Netflix.
I think Netflix.
Netflix, yeah. And it was about this woman who basically she like left. Like she was this blind woman, and she was this beautiful, she could play this cello beautifully, and this man found her and he took her, and she like left and she like disappeared for years, and then she came back and she could see, and her family was like, we have no idea what happened to her, and we're just trying to make sure she's okay. And you come to find that she's like had all of these near-death experiences, and she's like an angel. And anyway, it's like, it was 3 seasons long. It's not coming back. And I'm so mad because I was so excited for the new season, or maybe it's 2 seasons. Anyway, I loved it. And I loved the way that the other side was portrayed as being like this, like kind of all full of energy. Like, I do think that, I don't know if we like, I don't think we look like ourselves, but I think it's all cosmic and energy that's just kind of like moving. And I have no idea. Like, it could look exactly like this, right? Like, it could be a complete parallel universe that looks like it's like the one we have now. But I definitely think that there's something on the other side, but I don't think that's like pearly gates or anything like that.
Sometimes I picture it looking, because you always hear the thing like when people have these experiences, either psychedelic or on the other, you know, like near death, where they're like, it was realer than real. It felt like this was the dream, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I always kind of picture it like, okay, imagine, think about what our reality looks like compared to a dream. And then that's what the other side looks like compared to this. Like, it's like ultra 8K, like HD, like, you can see around time and space. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like super, super.
I can unpack that a little bit, because I've had that experience, and what it feels like is just that, like, basically all synchronicities like compound into one moment, and there's not a single thing that goes by that isn't meaningful. There's not an ounce of energy wasted, right? So it's just like every, like, the colors are vibrant, the smells are more alive. It's like everything is like how it should be. Like, this world is like a lower vibration. You know what I mean? Like, it's dull.
Wow.
It's like, it's, you know, it's like your mind is scattergorized. And, but it's like when you're in that sort of experience of like, this feels realer than this world. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's like that. It's just like vibrant, and everything has deeper meaning, and time seems to just stand still. You know, it's like, every movement is there's a reason behind it. I think that's called like Wu Wei, right? Not a wasted movement.
Wow.
Not a wasted breath, you know?
Is it almost like synesthesia? is when babies are born, they can like taste color and yes. smell sound.
Yeah,
and
I think it's exactly like that.
Really? Yeah, because I'd imagine, because like I've heard people having these experiences like what you said, but they said that they could like the earth, you know, like they could feel things and the like nature, they could like taste nature.
Yeah, it's almost like
even though they weren't putting it in their mouth, you know.
Yeah, you can
eating grass.
Put that stick down.
They did have a mouthful of grass, but
crawling all over.
This tastes like dirt.
Dave, are you okay?
Nature tastes like dirt.
This is a dream. This world's not real. It's realer over in my mouth. Dave, you need to go home.
Everyone, crawl into my mouth.
Also, who invited Dave? Dave just showed up.
This Dave, bee is my chill. Friend.
Dave, we just want you to be chill. It's all good. You can stay, but.
Oh, my God.
I hope you guys are right, because if I get to the other side and it's just like a strip mall in Burbank.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to be very disappointed.
Oh, that would be awful. And you know what used to really scare me when I thought about death was that it never ends, that it's like time never ends. That would be awful to be stuck at a strip mall forever.
But right. The strip yeah. mall is full of toys from the 80s.
And oh, then you know what? I'm down.
Yeah. Dude. It's just all your favorite stuff.
Make your own strip mall, Riley.
Oh, I am so down for a strip mall full of toys. Just bins full of toys like, from the 80s.
Yeah, just like Kenner's classic Real Ghostbusters and, you know, Silverhawks.
Oh, my God. I recently decided that I'm going to go onto eBay and start collecting things that I used to love in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I'm going to start my own mini collections because, you know, when you're a kid, like you don't want to be a baby anymore. And so you get rid of a lot of your stuff because you're like, I'm not a baby anymore. These are baby things. I'm a teenager now or whatever. And now I'm like, God, I wish I would have kept all that stuff. Like army ants. My brother had so many army ants, and now they're so expensive on eBay.
Yes.
I've been chasing that dragon for 20 years.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean with army ants?
I'll send you
recapturing
of my
his
office.
Childhood through toys.
I didn't know that, Michael.
I had like all the good stuff, and I sold it all I sold the first chunk to take my freshman homecoming date, who was like just a friend and not interested in dating me, to like a nice dinner. And then the rest I sold because I wanted to get a Super Nintendo, and my parents told me there was no way that they were going to buy one. So
you gave up your Silverhawks for Sizzler.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, where did you guys go?
What was it called? It was called like EBT's. And it was like what I thought was the fanciest restaurant at the time. This is in Kansas City.
It's like an Olive Garden.
Well, yeah, no, but it was like, I think I remember I ordered duck, and then I choked on the duck because it was so gamey. I'd never had it before. And I thought,
how's the duck?
I thought like that was a refined thing to do. And my dad
was so pissed the whole time. You're like, I sold all of my toys.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I tried
that. I choked on.
I was chewing and I couldn't break it up. And I was swallowing it and then I started choking on it.
That's great.
Like, for this, I got rid of Cat's Lair. I sold Cat's Lair for $5 for this.
And I mean, honestly, hats off to you for ordering the duck as a kid. And also, like, that was, I remember I used to work at Houston's, Hillstone Houston's.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good restaurant. And I remember when, like, kids would come in and they'd be, like, clearly on a date and they were so young and they would try and order fancy things. And I'd just be like, oh my God, this is the sweetest thing. But also, like, they're not going to know how to eat that.
Right.
You know?
Just get the burger,
get through
kid.
This?
Yeah. Yeah, come on. You'll have a nice time.
Eat what you know. Eat what you know.
All right. Well, Ennis, we have a game that we love to play with all of our guests, and you are certainly no exception. I'm going to go down a list of phenomena, rapid fire. If you're open to it, you're going to say believe it. If you're not, you're going to say bullshit. If you're somewhere in between, you have to come down on one side of the fence. All right. We can circle back and talk about any of these things that you want to come back to. But here we go.
Okay.
This is a game we call Bullshit
or Believe It.
Anise, on your mark, get set. Ghosts.
Believe it.
UFOs.
Believe it.
Bigfoot.
Believe it.
ESP.
Believe it.
Shadow people.
I've met one. Believe it.
Unicorns.
Oh, I want it to be believe, but it's bullshit.
Alien abductions.
Believe it.
Yeti.
I mean, believe it.
Mothman.
Bullshit.
Out of body experiences.
Believe it.
Tarot cards.
Believe it.
Demonically possessed dolls.
Oh, bullshit.
The healing power of crystals.
believe it. I've got a drawer full of them. I want them to work.
An alien spacecraft crashed at Roswell.
Believe it.
Loch Ness Monster.
I'm teetering, and I think I'm falling into bullshit.
Atlantis.
Bullshit.
Haunted houses.
Believe it.
Skunk ape.
Skunk cape?
Skunk ape.
Skunk ape. I've never heard of skunk ape.
Okay. I think that counts as an unlock, don't you, boys?
That counts.
Okay.
That counts.
Unlock it, baby.
You unlocked a hidden game within the game. The Jersey Devil.
Is this one that you're asking me about?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. We'll get to the skunk ape game after the rest of this.
Okay, wait. The Jersey Devil? Mm-hmm. I want this to be another game. What is the Jersey Devil?
It's like a weird cryptid creature that's got like bat wings and like a weird goat head that like hangs out in the Pine Barrens.
Not on like the Jersey Shore, but like somewhere else in Jersey?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like a demonic cryptid. That was birthed the 13th child of a woman.
From Jersey. I'm pretty sure I've met a few of them, but I'm going to say bullshit.
The biblical devil.
Bullshit.
Speaking to the dead.
Oh, believe it.
Mermaids.
Bullshit.
The government is hiding the truth about Sasquatch.
I think that's bullshit.
Past lives.
Believe it.
Life on other planets.
Believe it.
Life after death.
Believe it.
All right. You did great. Let's circle back before we move on to game two. Let's see. You met a shadow person.
Oh, yeah. That's happened to me before. And I don't know if it's like sleep paralysis, like you had mentioned earlier. But basically, there's been a couple times when I've woken up once as a kid, both of them as kids, but once as like a, you know, young adult, where I've woken up and there was like a person like hovering over me and I could see them. One of them was like an older woman. And then one of them was, I think they were both like older women, but they were hovering over me and I couldn't move. And it was like, I wasn't sure if I was awake or if I was still in my dream. And then like, I couldn't talk either. And then I could finally start moving. And I like, once I could start talking, I was like telling it to leave and it slowly left.
Oh.
So that has happened to me a couple times. And it is.
That counts.
Awful. It is awful. Yeah. But I didn't feel like she was. One time I felt scared, and then the other time I felt like she was just checking in.
Got it. Maybe an ancestor that you didn't know about.
Maybe, yeah.
You mentioned before we started recording that your family is kind of a Bigfoot family. You said to leave it to Bigfoot. What's that about? Yeah.
Well, my husband really loves Bigfoot. And I will say, like, for instance, the other night I went outside and it was like dusk and he was in the pool like soaking because it's ice cold and he thinks that's like good for him because of, you know, Joe Rogan podcast. And I was gonna finish gardening real quick and there was something coming from his phone and it was like, arr, arr, like this weird crazy noise. And I was like, what is that what are you listening to? And he's like, oh, just some Bigfoot footage. Let me just listen to these two.
I love this guy.
Are you married to Bryce? Bryce, do you have a secret second family that we don't know about?
No, just a jacuzzi Bigfoot club where we go over footage and vocalizations in a jacuzzi.
That's another Patreon.
Maybe you'll get an invite.
Oh, man.
Boy, you might have to get him on the show.
Yeah, he loves it. I mean, like, we have watched several Bigfoot documentaries, and what's better than a good Bigfoot documentary is a bad Bigfoot documentary, mm-hmm. where it's Hell just yeah. like feels like a 13-year-old kid made it, and he's just like learned, you know, how to not Photoshop but like use whatever iMovie.
I could not agree more. Absolutely.
Right? They're so fun to watch. And like, we were watching one the other night, and it was like, these formations have been found in forests all along the Central Coast. No one knows what they are, but they're triangular shaped. And then it's just like a series of pictures of like broken trees that are like made to in shapes like X's, you know?
Tree structures,
Tree structures. But I mean, like right now I'm facing an original artwork from an artist, and it's Bigfoot in a bus. So we have like a lot of Bigfoot stuff.
Well, you're going to need to take a photo of that and send it to us. We'll put it on
Instagram. I will.
All right.
Yeah, we do like Bigfoot in this house.
Well, your husband may already know about this entity and may already be a fan, but since you don't know what Skunk Ape is, you've unlocked a secret game called 60 Seconds to Sell Skunk Ape. I think I said that right. Bryce has 60 seconds on the clock to convince you that Skunk Ape is real. All right, Bryce, you ready? Because on your mark,
I'm ready.
Get set, go.
All right, I think we can get right to the point on this one. Look, Anna East, we're both Bigfoot believers, right?
Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bigfoot. So all Skunk Ape is Florida's Bigfoot. That's it. That's it. It's just an East Coast swamp Sasquatch. And they call it Skunk Ape because sometimes it has a white mark down its back and it smells like a skunk. What do you say? Can we put you down as a believer for Skunk Ape?
And these are found in swamps in and
seconds.
Around Florida.
Yeah. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
I do have to say I did go to Florida once during the pandemic, so it was weird. And I think it's very possible that something is lurking. I mean, there's a lot going on in Florida.
Great, great. I'm just going to write you down here as a believer. I have your addresses so and so. And and you know, for ordering today, I'm going to go ahead and put in a pack
of
M&M's.
You're done. Stop, Bryce. You're done.
A pack of M&M's?
Oh, no. That
what
came
kind?
In that guy, nope. He cannot speak anymore. I'm sorry.
Damn.
Anna East.
I hope it's peanut.
Do
or peanut
you
butter.
Buy Skunk Ape?
Like, I really do think that it's very possible that something is living in those swamps in Florida. And so much is happening in Florida that, you know what? If I believe in Bigfoot, I can't
leave out Florida.
Open-minded.
Yeah,
Bryce, exactly.
Stop. Bryce,
if
you're done.
If Floridians selling. Believe in it, then I can't be closed-minded. You know, I can't discriminate one Bigfoot
yes?
for the other. I'm going to go ahead and say sure.
Boom.
All right. Congratulations, Boom. Bryce. You sold Skunk
nice.
Ape.
Well, thank you very much. And look, to learn more about the Skunk Ape, visit our backlog BCC episode 19 with Adam Marcinowski, where we discuss the Myakka Skunk Ape.
All right.
I like how you went for the hard sell that time.
I used some of, did you hear my trial closes? Yeah, that's how I used to sell computer toner ribbons and cartridges.
You were closing that sale.
Yeah, and that makes and that makes sense, doesn't it? And you could see why that would benefit you, don't you?
That's good.
You can't say
did
no to those
feel,
questions.
Yeah.
Did Always you ever feel closing. Guilty selling stuff?
I hated sales with a fucking passion.
Yeah.
Oh.
Me too.
Well, I'm glad you're finally using it for something good, Bryce.
You're using it for good, yeah.
Because I know you use it for photos.
I got to say, the photos haven't been working lately. So
no, I know. Well, moving on to new techniques. So.
There's photos, Annie's. We'll make sure you see them before you say goodnight tonight.
Oh my God. That is, okay, great.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's time for this week's Story of High Strangeness with Bryce.
Ooh.
Okay. I'm going to stop and do a new recording, so everybody stand by.
Okay.
All right, we're back. Before we get into this week's Story of High Strangeness, Anaïs has taken a look at the Myakka Skunk Ape photos. Mm-hmm. Do you stand firm by your decision to buy Skunk Ape?
I am standing so firmly in my decision. Great. And I feel like I would be kicking myself if I said I didn't believe in it. Of course I believe in Skunk Ape.
We should do that now. Like if you don't use the photos, like when people say no, we show them the photo afterwards. Like, this is what you could have won.
I like that. I like that a lot.
All right, Bryce. Well, it's your turn for a story of high strangeness tonight. What do you got for us?
Look, hearing our conversation, our lovely conversation that we had with Anaïs, I think everybody is going to really like this story. I'm going to start it with a quote. Do not try and bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth. There is no spoon. Then you'll see it's not the spoon that bends. It is only yourself. Little boy in the Oracle's waiting room. The Matrix.
That was Einstein.
God, I love The Matrix, too.
This is one where I feel like Bryce is just going to start describing a movie.
Yeah. We love The Matrix quote. You know where we're headed.
You've probably never heard of him, but at one point in time, Andreja Puharich was one of the world's leading innovative scientists. An experimental researcher and physician, his primary aim was to bridge the fields of parapsychology and medicine. He held numerous patents granted in medicine as well as electronics, and is the inventor of the Faraday cage, hearing aids, and the ideascope, a special strobe light that could train the user to have out-of-body experiences at will. Dr. Andreja Puharich authored several groundbreaking books about his research into the uncharted waters of parapsychology. Considered a cautious and methodical scientist, he wrote the best-selling books Beyond Telepathy and The Sacred Mushroom, Key to the Door of Eternity. But if you know him at all, it's probably because he is largely credited for discovering the famed psychic Uri Geller. Anna, do you know who Uri Geller is?
I do not, no.
Okay, he's the spoon bender. You remember him? Ever heard of him?
Not we'll get from the into Matrix?
It. We'll get into it.
Okay, not from The Matrix. Okay, that's
not from The Matrix.
Okay, because I do know now, The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I like that you were like, have you heard of it? And then you're just like the one like very specific thing she would have known had she heard of him. No other context or information
the
whatsoever.
That's all you need.
Guy.
Yeah.
You know the airbender?
But I do know about the spoonbender.
You know the last, you know the last airbender? Well, this guy's kind of like that, but he's the spoonbender.
Yeah, she knows. Yeah. We're going to get into it. We're going to get right into it.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Now, the extraordinary claims of Dr. Andreja Puharich is why I'm interested, because he says that a group of extraterrestrials who called themselves the Nine contacted him and threatened his reputation as a legitimate scientist and cast him in the dubious role of contactee. Born in Chicago in 1918, Puharich was one of seven children born to Croatian immigrants. During World War II, Puharich was a student in the Army Specialized Training Program. He earned an undergraduate degree in philosophy and pre-medicine and received his MD from the Northwestern University School of Medicine in 1947. From 1953 to 1955, he served as a captain in the Army Medical Corps and was already presenting papers about the possible military usefulness of paranormal phenomena such as extrasensory perception, or ESP. Earning him meetings with various high-ranking officers and officials from the Pentagon, CIA, and Naval Intelligence. And Anaïs, I heard you say a big yes on ESP, so let's get into it. In 1952, Puharich had been investigating the Hindu scholar Dr. D.G. Vinod, who claimed to possess clairvoyant powers. It was at this time, during one of their meetings, when suddenly the scholar went into a trance and proceeded to speak in a strange voice with a perfect English accent. The voice described itself as a representative of the nine principles and forces, superhuman intelligences who created mankind and whose aim was to aid human evolution.
I am the beginning. I am the end. I am the emissary. But the original time I was on the planet Earth was 34,000 of your years ago. I am the balance. And when I say I mean because I am an emissary for the nine. It is not I, but it is the group. We are nine principles of the universe. Yet together, we are one.
Well done. Strangely enough, this concept of the nine is nothing new. Stories of emperors, kings, and pharaohs consulting a pantheon of nine gods can be found in multiple cultures across the globe. The ancient Egyptians had what was known as the Great Ennead, a group of nine deities in Egyptian mythology who were worshipped at Heliopolis. And in Greek mythology, after punishing Prometheus for giving fire, or divine knowledge, to mankind, the infuriated Zeus decided to punish mankind for accepting this forbidden knowledge by gathering eight other deities and forming the Council of Nine. Together, this council created Pandora and sent her as a gift to Epimetheus, along with a box, Pandora's box. She was told never to open it, but of course, you know how the story goes. Curiosity got the best of Pandora, and she opened the box, releasing all of the misfortunes of mankind. Which, oddly enough, bears a striking resemblance to the creation story of Genesis in the Bible, when in the Garden of Eden, God gave Adam and Eve everything they could ever want in this paradise. And yet, he also placed a certain tree as well, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that was not to be touched by Adam or Eve. And of course, what did they do? They ate from it. And so began man's fall from grace. But I suppose God didn't see that coming. But I digress. 4 years had passed since Andrea Purich had heard that
strange
voice.
I'm still surprised. I'm still wrapping my mind around the fact Zeus showed up for a minute.
This is going to get this is covering all the bases, buddy.
It's a wild ride, yeah.
Yeah, this is a wild ride. Like, strap in your seatbelt.
Tell me when Thanos shows up, okay?
Oh, I forgot Thanos. Damn. 4 years had passed since Andrea Purich had heard that strange voice come through the Hindu scholar. Purich was now in Mexico, where he met a doctor and his wife who also had claims of being in touch with space beings through the mouth of a trance medium. The doctor had sent Purich two messages he had received from the space beings, who had ordered him to transmit them to Purich. The messages stated that they were the same nine principles who had spoken through the Hindu scholar so long ago, and that they would be contacting Purich again in due course. Enter Yuri Geller. Yes, the Spoonbender. Geller's a Hungarian name, and Yuri's parents, Itzhak and Margaret, had fled from Hungary shortly before the Second World War. They succeeded in reaching Palestine, now Israel, in 1940, where they gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. Yuri was born on December 20th, 1946, in Tel Aviv. Aside from being a normal boy whose parents were on the splits due to his father's infidelity, Yuri had, or maybe the better word is, received special abilities as a child. You see, Yuri is a self-proclaimed psychic. When questioned about the origin of his powers, he mentioned an incident that took place when he was just 5 years old. His mother had an old sewing machine which had a small hole through which he could see a tiny blue spark. One day, he tried to touch the spark with his finger. The shock threw him backward violently. Shortly thereafter, his powers began to manifest themselves. He discovered one day that he could read his mother's mind. When she came back from playing cards, he knew exactly how much money she had won or lost and would tell her so, to her amazement. But the tangible phenomenon began when he was six. His father had given him a watch. One day in class, he noticed, God, I almost went into Christopher Walken with this watch that I gave you in class. Anyway, he noticed that it was a half an hour fast, so he set it right. But the time would constantly spring forward. He decided there must be something wrong with the watch. However, when the watch was left at home, it behaved perfectly. Then one day he placed it on the desk in front of him and saw that the hands were going around much too fast. Deciding it was faulty, he persuaded his parents to buy him another. That's when the hands on the watch somehow bent upwards, touching the glass, ruining it. Sometime later, as he sat in class without his watch, the boy sitting next to him remarked,
"Hey, my watch just moved ahead an hour."
In a mischievous mood, Yuri claimed, "I did that." He took the watch, concentrated on it, and somehow made the hands move ahead on their own. His classmates were astonished. Needless to say, Yuri quickly gained a reputation amongst his school friends as that kid. Then began the spoon bending. One day while eating soup, the bowl of the spoon fell off the handle. And another time in a coffee shop he frequented with his mother, the spoons around him started bending, although he wasn't even touching it. After that came locks, keys, and just about anything metal Yuri could get his hands on. He also noticed a strong telepathic link to his mother. One time when she was in an accident, Yuri knew the very second it happened and was guided directly to the room where she was taken at the hospital. Fast forward 15 years later, Yuri's talents had caught the attention of Dr. Andrea Purich. Purich had read a report about a young Israeli with incredible powers, including the ability to move the hands of a watch without touching it, and to cause a ring held by someone else to snap merely by cupping his hands around the person's hand. He wrote to Geller in Israel and went to see him. When Geller passed a series of tests, he became immediately convinced of Geller's true abilities and brought him to America for scientific investigation. One day, whilst working together, Geller was in a light hypnotic trance, and a strange computer-like voice began speaking from the air and identified itself as some kind of superhuman or non-human entity, and went on to explain that they had chosen Geller to be an instrument of their purpose. If that weren't enough, before this metallic-like voice began speaking out of thin air, while Geller was in a hypnotic session with Purich, Geller was asked about his childhood, only to reveal that when he was just 3 years old, he had gone into the garden opposite his home. In the sky above his head, he noticed a bright bowl-shaped object. There was a high-pitched ringing sound in the air. The light came down closer to him, and that's when some type of figure emerged with a shining face and wearing a black cape. He appeared in front of little Yuri and dazzled him with a ray of light that shot from his head straight into Yuri so hard that he fell to the ground and lost consciousness. In later communications, the space beings identified themselves as the Nine, the same Nine that Purich had heard from some 20 years earlier. The Nine explained that they chose Yuri because his biological makeup was suitable for their purposes and that he was the perfect receiving station for the powers they would transmit to him. They told the men that they existed in another dimension outside of space and time and had been watching the human race for some thousands of years, and at present, they were in a starship called Spectra, somewhere out in deep space. Moreover, it was they who were connected with the phenomenon known as flying saucers or UFOs. Their ultimate purpose was to save man from destroying himself and to bring about world peace. With practice, Geller's talents grew but were often unpredictable and hard to handle. There's even the time he supposedly and accidentally teleported himself across New York. Yuri was walking down a street in Manhattan with Maria Janis, Gary Cooper's daughter. They had left the apartment to go jogging, and within 2 minutes of walking out the door on 68th and Park, Yuri somehow landed in Purich's home in Ossining, New York, 36 miles away. Purich recalls,
"I was home alone. I heard this huge crash and thought it was an earthquake. I couldn't find the source of it at first, and then I heard this bleak voice, 'Andrea, Andreja.' There he was, crumpled up on the floor. He was intact and wasn't hurt at all. I've had a lot of that kind of stuff with Yuri."
Well, go on. Geller's talents also caught the attention of NASA astronaut Captain Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, who was so impressed by Geller's abilities, he decided to introduce Geller to a series of controlled tests in one of the most secretive labs in the world, the famed Stanford Research Institute, where cutting-edge research was being conducted, the type of experimental research that had strong military applications. It was here where remote viewing was born. The lab was headed up by laser scientist legends Hal Pudoff and Russell Targ, who had Geller bending metal, teleporting things, demonstrating incidents of telepathy and clairvoyance to their utter amazements. The results were astounding and the stuff of legend. As one story goes, there was another lab upstairs for ARPA, a computer network system. Somebody put two and two together and said,
"Hey, there's a crazy kid downstairs who is bending metal and levitating things."
So they cross-correlated and discovered that when Yuri did something, the computers would go wacko. Program printouts would pop up, sometimes partly erased. The power supply would go out, followed by a startling realization.
"Holy shit! He's affecting our computers!"
Panic ensued. A squad of colonels came out from Washington to sniff around and watch Yuri do his thing. They were immediately shaken.
You guys do know that our whole defense system's based on computers and magnetic tape cards, don't you? Can this guy wipe them out? And will he cooperate? That second one was not a question.
You sure said it like a question, sir. Your inflection went up at the end.
Stand down.
It did come up at the end, sir.
We're just trying to follow your orders, and it's just
we're just following the order.
They're a little confused.
Is that an order or a question? Yeah, we're confused.
I have a very melodic tone to my voice.
Still sounds like you're asking a question. Am I
it's
right?
It's been a problem most of my life.
I said stand down.
Stand down.
Is that a question or an order, sir? We're really confused.
That's an order.
So they took Geller to Bell Labs and to the Livermore Radiation Lab, and they put together an elaborate setup for magnetic shielding. They learned that he could wipe out anything on computer tape. The colonels were floored. Riley?
This guy. Good start. Good start. It's
a lot of destiny.
Good start, World War III.
Later. The Secret Service asked if Geller...
Yuri Geller could start World War III.
World War III?
Well, if he could wipe out the tapes, yes.
Is that a question or an order, sir? Again, we don't know.
Oh, Jesus. Later, the Secret Service asked if Geller could activate the hotline between Moscow and Washington, to which Puerich responded,
"I think he could, but I don't think he cares to. You'd have to pay him to do so."
After that, they said they would categorize him as a higher intelligence. You see, Geller had already astonished the world with his previous television appearances, which caused a sensation in Europe. Hundreds of kids started to bend metal as a result of seeing him either on TV or in person. But the Americans were more skeptical. That is, until they tested him in their labs. It was then the government brass realized they may well indeed have a real problem on their hands. If kids all around the world actually started to believe that these types of mental powers could be learned and used, any kid on a caper could cause a national security crisis. It's not hard to imagine closeted discussions of quieting Geller. But since the genie was already out of the bottle, they concocted a better idea. Enter stage magician James Randi and scientific skeptic. The idea was to discredit Geller through a targeted disinformation campaign developed by Ray Hyman in the Department of Defense using the amazing Randi. The plan was simple. Concoct a smokescreen around Geller so that no one would take him seriously. And Randi was perfect for the job since he didn't believe in the paranormal, not one bit in the first place. His job was to make things difficult for legitimate psychic researchers. When the average Joe would say, "Geller's a fake, Randi proved it," their mission was deemed a success. Now, I should mention here that Geller probably made this much easier than it needed to be. You see, early in his career, when he would perform psychic feats and metal bending in front of live audiences, and seeing how his powers weren't 100% reliable, his entertainment manager convinced him to have a mentalist trick always at the ready. His manager would watch an audience member or two leave their car and write down their license plate numbers, which he gave to Geller to reveal on stage. But they got caught. and Geller's reputation ultimately paid the price. After the glory years of psychic and ESP testing at the Stanford Research Institute, it became a CIA research center with a focus on psychological warfare operations. His time in the limelight, however, took its toll, exhausted by skeptics and everyone he came across asking him to bend something. Geller and Andrea eventually went their separate ways. Andrea continued his research in parapsychology with a focus on low-frequency waves and their causal effects, and Geller went on to make millions as a hired psychic dowser for oil drilling companies. Once when asked about what he thought of Uri Geller, Andrea said,
"He won't admit it, but I can tell you after researching him for years that he's E.T. Like, the man who fell to Earth. He just wants to be a regular person."
And that is the story of Andrea Purich, Uri Geller, and the Council of Nine.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I like that story.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts about it.
Tell us.
Okay. Well, it's like... Okay, I recently watched this documentary. Have you guys ever heard of Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind? It's
yeah,
this like
sure.
new documentary that yes. came out in 2021.
The, okay. The Stephen Greer stuff about him contacting UFOs through.
Yeah, it's a human being initiated contact protocol.
Exactly. And like, so I recently talked about this on a show that I do, and like everybody turned on me. It was like everyone's right. like, "This is a cult. Get out, Annalise." And it's not like I'm outside like trying to call, you know, ET, but I think that it's like skeptics, you know, it's a fine line between like conspiracy theory and skepticism, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. where it's like sometimes people, I think, like if you say everything you actually believe, like you can sometimes be persecuted for your beliefs, you know, yeah. a lot of people have been persecuted for their beliefs. And I don't know if it's because that person becomes too powerful and they become like an egomaniac, or if it's the people around them that make them an egomaniac. You know, well, it's like this relationship between the two.
It's funny you should mention, I mean, because Uri would state that, you know, amongst skeptics, if they were really skeptical, his powers would find themselves dwindling. Whereas if he could gain momentum and belief started to develop in a room or with an audience, his powers grew, you know?
Yes. Like there is that study with water, and I can't remember the scientist, but
yeah, Dr. Imaro Motaru, the hidden yes. messages in water. Yeah.
And
fantastic.
The way that he like the if there's good energy and good vibrations in the room, that the water would crystallize in these beautiful formations like diamonds. It was gorgeous. But if the room was skeptical and there was bad energy around, then the water would just look terrible.
Yes.
You know?
And one of my favorite books, I mean, yeah, exactly how you explained it. He ran a series of tests photographing microscopic water molecules, and mm-hmm. some he would emit a Buddhist chant upon it, and then some he would be like, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you," you know? And
yes.
The ones he would photograph with thoughts of like love or thankfulness or gratitude came out in these beautiful crystalline structures. And the ones that had sort of even like heavy metal playing or something came out like distorted, and they were still beautiful, but in a different sort of, you know, in
well,
a way.
Don't knock
so
against
sweet.
Heavy metal, guys.
Still beautiful.
Riley, we still love rock and roll.
Sorry,
don't worry
Riley.
About it. It was ugly, but it's still beautiful.
I mean, that'd be kind of cool. Like, maybe you could sell like water, canned water that has heard like 1,000 hours of Slayer or something. You know? There's a market for that. For sure.
Death water, death
yeah, water.
Water.
I drink death water.
Oh my God.
But yeah, then they say that that's why when you like look at yourself, like mirrors can be really dangerous. That you, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you should tell yourself that you're beautiful, wonderful, powerful, because the water molecules, they say that
yeah.
the water molecules in your body can actually change.
100%.
So if you tell yourself you're ugly and I look stupid and, you know, what else do I tell myself?
You know what?
You're an idiot. You know?
That's the water esoteric lore. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? You know?
Yes.
And ever since I read that book, whenever I drink water and I try to drink lots of it, as it's going down, I always say to my water, I love you, thank you. I love you, thank you. With every swallow I take. It's just
that's
a habit
your secret. That's how you look so good.
That's my secret of you.
Oh,
you
my
guys.
God. Okay. I'm gonna start.
Here's a little fun fact. Did you guys know that the series Star Trek was inspired and heavily influenced by the Council of Nine? Transcripts show that Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry had extensive communications with the Nine. After Andrea's initial contact with the Council of Nine, he created a group called the Roundtable Foundation, or Lab 9, to research paranormal happenings. Prominent members included the influential philosopher and inventor Arthur M. Young, the socialite Alice Astor, various scientists, and even Hollywood's John Povel and Gene Roddenberry. Lab 9 wanted to hire Roddenberry to write a screenplay based on the Council of Nine's imminent return. So Roddenberry met and interviewed several psychics and prepared the groundwork for his script and began a series of channeled exchanges in 1975 with a being named Tom, who claimed to be one of the Nine. However, Roddenberry was frustrated by the first series as he felt that he had to make too many compromises to convention. Star Trek The Next Generation would be done his way, where the series gave even stronger mystical undertones. Roddenberry and his team created nine major characters, all having their own corresponding deities in the Egyptian Ennead, exactly as the Nine claimed to be. The series was then followed by Deep Space Nine that introduced a character named Vinod, a nod to Dr. G. Vinod, the real-life psychic channeler of the Council of Nine.
That's cool. I don't know too much about the Council of Nine stuff. It's very... I get it. I mean, it's that's like all. Cool. I feel like all that stuff is very. Look, I don't know much about it. This stuff feels to me, the Council of Nine stuff feels to me like in the realm of like Atlantis and Lemuria.
It's very Philip Dick too, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then like just a turn of the century spiritualist kind of stuff, like the Count of Comte de Saint Germain and like the Ascended Masters and all that stuff, like. I just don't know too much about it. I definitely love the like conceit that the archetype of like nine gods or like nine ascended masters or the Council of Nine or nine aliens shows up a lot. You know, that's fascinating. I think with the Uri Geller stuff though, you know, hey, listen, Bryce, you know, I love these stories and I think the stories are great. And this is a great story. I just kind of think that he's just probably a stage musician or stage magician that came up with like a really great backstory for his character, you know? And it's just like when you read about like how easy it is to actually bend spoons as a stage trick and then like how much money he lost trying to sue the Amazing Randy and losing in court over and over again. It's just like kind of sad. But I love the story of it. Like Anais says, you know, I'm just like, I don't know, you know, I feel like this was like a big fad in the 70s and 80s. And then he kind of like got debunked and then had to, I love that he's like making millions. He made millions like dousing for oil companies.
Psychic dousing. Yeah.
Yeah,
dousing.
It's fascinating. I just don't know if I just don't know where I fall, and that's not the point.
I totally hear you. I totally understand too. Yeah, it's a hard thing to fathom, isn't it?
Is there like
is this a hard thing for small minds to fathom? I understand, Michael. It's not for everybody.
Abuse.
Guys, sorry.
Small mind.
I didn't mean to start World War III with my brain, okay?
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there documentation from all this like experimenting that was done? Is there any
it's all been, a lot of it's been unclassified, and you can read about it in on websites. I think that, you know, how it's interesting is,
so it's on websites,
not on websites, but in books as well. Look, Annie Jacobson, a Pulitzer Prize finalist and investigative journalist,
the Area 51
wrote, wrote an incredible book documenting all these tests called Phenomenon. It's an incredible book.
Okay.
It's definitely worth a read, and it might change your mind on your skepticism. You know, there's a great.
Bryce, remember how upset you got at Annie Jacobson over on the Patreon when we talked about her theory for what really happened at Roswell?
No, what? No.
She's
Annie Jacobson is the author.
Of Area 51. Remember we talked about this over?
Yes,
and that
yes,
there were
I
actually kids that had been experimented on by the Russians and shot over from Mexico, and you got really upset at her.
I know. That's just because, I think that was just a horrifying thought.
Oh, God.
But
thanks for bringing that.
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm just saying, you likely use Annie Jacobson.
Remember how upset you got when she talked about how children were experimented on?
You're Annie Jacobson. You like to bring her out as backup.
Didn't you say you
sometimes
felt bad for the monkeys?
I always wanted us to have a spoon bending party because Colonel John B. Alexander, a PhD who is has an extinguished military career and wrote the book UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. His latest book, Reality Denied, goes into some of these spoon-bending parties that he would have. His book is called The Firsthand Experiences with Things That Can't Happen But Did. The foreword is by Uri Geller. But he talks about these spoon-bending parties he would throw where he would bring a box of spoons, dump them on the table, and you know, he would start with saying, you have to set aside your skepticism. And he would say, more often than not, man, people were bending spoons at these parties. So maybe it's something we should try.
There's a lot of like stuff, you know, you can debunk spoon bending. That's the problem. You know what I mean? Because it is like a magician's trick. And I'm just saying it's out there. It's very easily Googleable.
I want to see you bend a spoon, Michael.
Yeah.
That'll put this to bed.
I'll tell you what. We'll bend spoons and see what happens. If I can bend a spoon with my mind, I'll believe it.
Great.
Because you know what's kind of crazy when you think about this is like, say for Uri, right? Like imagine being like part of the nine and imagine it being like, what if, right? What if it was actually legitimate? And you're like one of those people and you're really bending spoons and you're really doing this and you're really like, you guys, this is the bigger picture here. And we're a lot more powerful than we think. And we're just limited. And, you know, you can get out of that. And then people just persecuting you or being skeptical or what do we call Michael? Small-minded.
Yeah. Like, well, that's the scarier thought, isn't it? That there's reality to this. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you think about Joan of Arc, right? I mean, it's like she was persecuted and look what she did, you know, just because she stood up for what she believed.
Yeah. We'll never know. You said it earlier, Annie's, the mind we still have yet to comprehend and its powers have yet to be unleashed. We know nothing about its potential capabilities. And if ESP is one of them, which I think we can all get on board and say there's definitely some ESP powers that probably do exist, then why can't telekinesis be part of that arsenal?
Yeah.
I agree. 10% of our brain we use.
Mm-hmm.
What is the rest of it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what is it? I want to know so bad. I feel like I don't want to die before it all gets discovered.
I know. Did you guys ever do this? After watching Star Wars, I would go to my basement. I would turn my little three-wheeler trike on its handlebars, and I would try holding out my hand to see if I could spin that big front round tire. And, you know, nothing ever came of it. My big wheel. Yeah. I tried to spin my big wheel.
I really, really thought I could move things with my mind for sure as a child. I tried so many times because I mean mine was Carrie. I watched Spaceballs as a child a bunch, but I never watched Star Wars until I was like a few years ago. It was crazy.
What if it
I
was
that
just
your role model was Carrie?
Yeah.
Like we had Luke Skywalker, you had Carrie. Like,
what if it's just true belief stopping us, you know? What if it's what if it's our skepticism closing off that door,
you know? Because again, it's like a fine line, right? Where it's like I used to have this dream, for instance, and where I can fly because I have lucid dreams. So I'm always like, oh, this is a dream. I'm going to fly. Yep. And so I start flying, but I'm always scared I'm going to fly too high. And so I always have to go back down. And I'm like, I want to fly in between, right? I don't want to be walking. I want to be flying, but I don't want to be flying too high because then I end up like in space and I'm scared, you know? And so it's like, I want to be able to like fly in the middle. But it's like, if we do unlock these things and we do lean into these things, is it too out there?
It's like, it reminds me of the time I gave myself the role of Anakin Skywalker while high on mushrooms. I had gotten the job, I had filmed it, and I was wonderful in it. No more to do or say. I had completed it, you know, because I 100% believed.
You flew too close to the sun, Bryce, and those wings, wax wings melted. Anna East Fairweather, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Bryce, great job, by the way. That was a great story. Where, Anna East, can people, we don't know where to find Bigfoot, but where can people find you?
Right. I mean, I just found out about Skunk Ape. So listen, you can find me and my, I'm going to be starting to look for Skunk Ape. And so you can find me at Anna East Fairweather on Instagram. I don't have like a cool name. It's just Anna East Fairweather. There's no spaces. And then I also do a show with my comedy team every Monday and Thursday night at 7 o'clock on Twitch. And we are called Private Straight Comedy.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic. Cool. And you know what? Another place you can find Annie's is over on our Patreon, BCC The Other Side, because Annie's, you're going to stick around. You're going to come do an episode with us.
I can't wait.
That's going to go up on Friday. So if you're listening to it or if you're a member of The Other Side, you'll get more of Annie's this week. Patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. I'm at McMills on Instagram. We are at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram and Bigfoot Pod on Twitter. Riley, Bryce, what you got?
Hey, I'll say you heard us mention it earlier on the podcast. I've developed an adult game for childish people. It's called Dirty Picture Cover Up. Go to thedpcugame.com. Order yours today as people are starting to gather around and have a good night's laugh again. It is the funniest game I've ever played. It's so much fun. Go get yours. I would love to hear how it goes and how it went.
Yeah, here. Buy Bryce's game for real. It's amazing. I'm Peace Drone on Instagram. That's where I am on the internet. And I just want to say again, The Other Side, like if you're thinking about signing up, like you should just try it for a month. It's not just like DVD bonus features. It's like an entire other show with an entire other back catalog. So if you like the show and you've gotten this far into the episode where you're listening to our plugs, you probably would like it. So just, you know, give it a shot. It also like truly is, it keeps us going, so we really appreciate our patrons over there.
Well
so
said.
That's what I have well to say said about that.
We're gonna head over to The Other Side. Annie's is coming with us for the rest of you. We'll see you then, or until next time, good night
and go get regressed. Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible, and if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.